ओम हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Gahiri Mahashai said, from the Vaishnavas themselves I have heard that Vaishnavas surrender to their emotions, and therefore they have no need for knowledge. What kind of statement is that? I myself, up to this time, have chanted the holy names of Lord Hari only to attain a certain feeling. I did not strive to understand any relationships. The Babaji said, a Vaishnava's feelings of ecstatic love are the final result of his devotional service. However, such love must be pure. They who think that this ecstatic emotion culminates in oneness with the impersonal Brahman cannot have actions and ecstatic emotions that are pure. Their pure ecstatic emotions are all an empty show. A single drop of pure ecstatic love fulfills all the desires of the spirit soul. However, when that emotion is contaminated by impersonalism, the only result is trouble and calamity for the spirit soul. The devotional emotional displays of one who in his heart thinks he is not different from the impersonal Brahman are merely a trick to cheat the innocent people. Therefore, pure Vaishnavas must thoroughly understand these relationships. Faithful Lahiri Mahashai then said, is there something higher than the impersonal Brahman? If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of the impersonal Brahman, then why do the philosophers not leave the impersonal Brahman and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead? The saintly Babaji laughed and said, Brahma, the four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, Narada, Shiva, and all other truly great philosophers took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's feet. Lahiri Mahashai said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form situated within space, and that form must also be limited in spatial terms. How then can the spatially limited form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead be the resting place of the all-pervading, spatially limitless impersonal Brahman? The Babaji replied, even in the material world, the element ether is also all-pervading and spatially limitless. Why then should the impersonal Brahman be considered so glorious? Merely because it is all-pervading and spatially limitless. From the splendor of his transcendental limbs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests the all-pervading, spatially limitless impersonal Brahman. At the same time, his transcendental form is spatially limited, situated in a specific place. Who has seen anyone like him? Because no one is like him, and because he has no rival, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is superior to the impersonal Brahman. His form is wonderfully attractive. In his transcendental form, all pervasiveness, omniscience, omnipotence, the greatest mercy, and the greatest bliss are gloriously manifested in their completeness. Is this form good? What virtue does it not have? What power does it not have? It is amorphous, all-pervading, unknowable, something good? All-pervading, unknowable, something good. Is that? The truth is that the impersonal Brahman is the qualityless aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Personality and impersonality exist side by side in the handsome form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal Brahman is merely one aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This formless, changeless, qualityless, unknowable, immeasurable feature of the Lord is liked by short-sighted persons. However, they who see everything do not like any feature but the original and complete form of the Lord. The Vaishnavas cannot place their faith in the formless, impersonal Brahman. For to do so would block their eternal nature and also block their pure love for Lord Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the resting place of both features. The qualityless Brahman and the quality-filled Supreme Person. He is an ocean of transcendental bliss, and therefore he is attractive to all pure spirituals. Lahiri, Krishna was born, performed activities, and then left his body at death. How is it possible that his form is eternal? Babaji, Sri Krishna's form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. His birth activities and so-called death are not material. Lahiri, why do the Mahabharata and other scriptures describe him in that way? Babaji, the eternal absolute truth is beyond description. Pure souls see Lord Krishna's form and pastimes. These persons then describe these both with words. Those words are like ordinary historical accounts of material persons. They who know the true meaning of the Mahabharata and the other scriptures understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in one way. And the unintelligent materialists understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in a very different way. Lahiri, when one meditates on Lord Krishna's form in one's heart, in one's heart naturally arises the idea of a form limited by both time and space. What other way is there to think of Lord Krishna's form? Babaji, thinking is an activity of the mind. As long as the mind is not purified and spiritualized, the mind's activity of thinking and meditating cannot be spiritual in its nature. When it develops a devotional attitude, the mind gradually becomes spiritualized. Then the mind's activity of thinking and meditating is inevitably spiritual in nature. When the Vaishnava devotees who delight in devotional service chant the holy names of Lord Krishna, the material world has no power to touch them. They are spiritualized. Residing in the spiritual world, they meditate on Lord Krishna's daily activities. In this way, they attain the bliss of confidential service to the Lord. Lahiri, please be merciful and give that spiritual understanding to me. Babaji, when you give up all material arguments and doubts, and when you chant the holy names day after day, then after a few days, genuine spiritual understanding will rise in your heart. As long as those material arguments remain, your mind will stay in the shackles of material understanding. When you taste the nectar of the holy name, the material shackles will be loosened. Then the spiritual world will be gloriously manifested in your heart. Lahiri, please be merciful and tell me about that I desire. Babaji, the mind and words cannot understand it. Only when one attains the bliss of spiritual life can one understand it. Give up all your arguments and for a few days chant the holy names of Lord Hari. Then all your doubts will go far away. Then you will no longer ask any question of anyone. Lahiri, I know that a person who has faith in Lord Krishna and tastes the nectar of his holy names attains the highest of all goals. I have well understood the relationship of the Lord and the individual soul. I will take shelter of the Lord's holy names. Babaji, that is the best of all. Understand well your relationship with the Lord and you will directly see the spiritual truth. Lahiri, yeah, it's just interesting the point before that in meditation, that one thinks of the Lord and meditates upon the Lord, and so naturally then what comes to mind, you know, for the impersonalist, the materialist, is that the Lord's form is material, limited by time and space. So he points out, since it's a material mind, therefore it can't understand the spiritual Lord. It'll naturally see things according to its perspective. It means eyes can only see, you know, shapes and colors. They can't see smells. You know, they can't, these things, they can't be seen. So, therefore, since the mind is material, it can only perceive material. It can't perceive spiritual. You have to have something spiritual to perceive spiritual. Therefore, Babaji is saying that if he will chant for some time, when the mind will become spiritualized, then he'll start to understand the Lord's form, his name, form, qualities, pastimes. Otherwise, he's saying, here, oh, this sounds very nice, please tell me about it. His point is that until you take up the devotional process, even when we tell you about it, you will not understand. therefore you take up this process. But here, I understand the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate form of the Supreme. The impersonal Brahman and the Supersoul are subordinate to him. He is all-pervading in the spiritual world. He manifests his wonderful form. He is a person. He is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. And he is the master of all potencies. Even though he is the master of all potencies, he is always overcome with bliss in the company of his Ladini, Shakti, pleasure potency. Now please tell me about the individual spirit souls. He's the master of all potencies, though his happiness is interacting with these potencies, rather than being the lord of them, but is interacting with his internal potency. Babaji, among the limitless potencies of Sri Krishna, one is called Tatastha Shakti, positioned between the spiritual and the material. This potency can reside in either of them. This potency is also called Jiva Tattva, the individual spirit souls. The individual souls are tiny particles of spirit. Because they are tiny particles, they may attain bondage in the material world. However, because they are pure spirit, they may also reside eternally in the supremely blissful spiritual world. The individual souls are of two kinds: souls who reside in the spiritual world, and two, souls in bondage who reside in the material world. Souls in bondage in the material world are of two kinds: one, intelligent; two, unintelligent. Birds, beasts, and human beings who do not strive to attain the supreme goal are the unintelligent, materially bound souls. Human beings who follow the path of the Vaishnava religion are intelligent. They who are not Vaishnavas do not actively strive for the real goal of life. Therefore, the scriptures declare the service to Vaishnavas and association with Vaishnavas are the best of all activities. Intelligent human beings who have faith in the scriptures and chant the holy names of Lord Hari naturally associate with Vaishnavas. They who are not intelligent do not have faith in the scriptures and do not chant the holy names of Lord Krishna. Even though they may serve the deity form of Lord Krishna according to the rules passed down through the disciplic succession, in their hearts such unintelligent persons do not properly honor Vaishnavas. Lahiri, now I understand the truth about Lord Krishna and the truth about the individual spirit souls. Now please tell me the truth about the illusory potency Maya. Maya is matter. Maya is one of the potencies of Lord Krishna. Maya is also called Apara Shakti, material potency, and Bahiranga Shakti, external potency. As a shadow stays far away from light, so Maya stays far away from Lord Krishna and his devotees. Maya manifested the 14 material worlds, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, which makes one think, I am this body. The gross and subtle material bodies of the bound souls are manifested by Maya. When a soul attains liberation, his spiritual body is cleansed of Maya's influence. To the extent he is tightly bound by Maya, to that extent the soul is far away from Lord Krishna. To the extent the soul is free of Maya's influence, to that extent the soul is able to see Lord Krishna face to face. The material universe, which is a place of sense pleasures for the bound souls, are sprouted from Lord Krishna's will. The spirit souls do not stay forever in the material world. The material world is only a prison for the spirit souls. Lahiri. O Master, now please tell me of the eternal relationship that exists between Maya, the individual soul, and Lord Krishna. Babaji, the tiny spirit soul is an eternal servant of Lord Krishna. The world of Maya is the soul's prison. By associating with devotees and chanting the holy names, the soul attains Lord Krishna's mercy. Then, restored to his original spiritual form, the soul tastes the nectar of direct service to Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. These are the confidential relationships between these three. Without understanding this, how can anyone engage in devotional service? Lahiri, if one should carefully obtain this knowledge, one must become a great scholar. Must one become a great scholar before becoming a Vaishnava? Babaji, a Vaishnava need not study different languages and not become a great scholar. To throw far away the bewilderment presented by Maya, what the soul must do is take shelter of the feet of a bona fide Vaishnava spiritual master. By the spiritual master's words of instruction and by the disciple's own spiritual activities, the disciple comes to understand the truth of these relationships. This is called diksha initiation and siksha instruction. We notice in here is that we're being taken through all of the main principles of the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. It's called the Dasa Mool. And we see that he's explained the beginning of knowledge is to understand Krishna, understand the living entity, and understand the material world, and then that relationship. So that is called knowledge. This is called Samanyayana. If one has this, one actually understands things. So he's gone through that, and he's also explained how the souls are bound by Maya, and that how one is going to understand these things and get beyond this is by the association of devotees. So then, with this, then when he brings us into the process, right? He's established the scriptures and the other authorities that they have given the evidence. Then he establishes Krishna's position in how he's a person. And once that is there, then he establishes the souls and the material world. Because unless you can understand Krishna's position as a person and everything coming from him, then you cannot understand the material world or the living entity. Like we see the impersonalists, they deal with the material world and soul, but they don't have the same outlook. They'll take that the material energy is, they'll say it's Maya, but they say it actually doesn't exist. They'll say because we think it exists, therefore it's there. You know, this I think, therefore I am. This kind of a thing, you know, or all these nice things like what's the sound of one hand clapping, or another popular one is if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear, will it make sound? These are things that like Buddhists sit around and crack their head on. You know, so. These kind of things, then, I say. What were we talking about?
You said this, they understand only the soul and.
Yes, okay. So they cannot understand really what's going on. So they'll say it's illusion. It's illusion. But it, for them, it's illusion that doesn't exist. For us, it's illusion, but it exists. So it actually factually is here, the material energy, but the illusion is that we think we're going to control it, enjoy it, and gain something, you know, substantial from it. You know, that's the illusion. It's not that it doesn't exist. Just like a small child may pick up a piece of glass, you know, and then think that now they become very rich because this is a very special diamond and he's going to get so much money. So the piece of glass exists. But his idea that this is a diamond, that's illusion. And that he's going to have so much money and this way enjoy and this and that. That's the illusion. So that's the difference. But the Mayavadis will say that stone also doesn't exist. Because you are thinking you want to, you know, how you say, enjoy wealth. So therefore, in your mind has come up these things. This is the idea. So therefore, because they don't know the Lord, they can't understand. And the soul, they feel, will be very happy merged in the Brahman. So because they only understand the eternal aspect of the Supreme Lord, the Brahman aspect, therefore they don't actually understand what's happiness. They can't relate or deal with the material happiness of this world. they can't relate to spiritual, actual spiritual happiness. This is no chit, there's also no proper knowledge, and there's no activities. So they actually can't, therefore they do nothing. You know, they don't engage in any proper activities. They don't think spirit engages in these things. So whatever little bit they gain from this, that's all they have. They don't have any more. So that's the weakness. So unless one understands the Lord, then the rest of it won't make any sense. Therefore we see that great trouble has been taken to establish Krishna's position as impersonal. It's either you accept him as a person and surrender, or it's impersonal. You know, various degrees, some more, some less. Because Lahiri Babu is saying he chants, he's a devotee, all these things, at the same time as he's arguing, well, how can the Lord have a form? Like that. So we see that this aspect was there.
Excuse me. He says there that the relationship between the Lord, Shiva and Vijayanaji is eternal, but usually we only speak of the Lord and the soul having eternal relationships with all of the material.
So it says, what is the eternal relationship?
Okay.
Like that. But it doesn't mean that one stays in the material world. It's just the relationship is that it's that the material energy is an expansion, a reflection. So it has an eternal relationship with Krishna. The other aspect is what it points out is it says that the tatastha shakti means it's in between the two. Therefore it can move in either one of them. Like that. It's in between the two. So to be tatastha means that both energies exist. So its relationship is it's in between. Does that make sense? But the proper situation of the soul is to be situated under the protection of the internal potency, not the external. Because the soul being Satchitananda, therefore it will be comfortable in the association of Satchitananda, while the material energy doesn't have any of these qualities. So there's nothing here really for the soul. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. So then he gets into... So to gain this knowledge, then one must gain that from a devotee. And then this whole process is called diksha and siksha. And now the question will come about initiation. Lahiri, what does one do after initiation and instruction? Babaji, living a moral life, one should serve Lord Krishna. This is called abhideya. Because it is clearly described in the Vedas and all other scriptures, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called this activity abhideya. Yeah, so living a moral life means that one follows the traditions that are given in the scriptures, and one should serve Lord Krishna. Because then the conditioned nature then is engaged in a proper way. And then it's kept in a proper situation. And then one should serve Lord Krishna. Because then whatever activity one does becomes perfect. Because one may say, well, why don't we just serve Lord Krishna? But the problem is we may find we can't do that all the time, 24 hours a day. So because of that, then this is given. Because someone who's on the liberated platform then doesn't have to worry about living a moral life. They just will naturally have no interest or attraction to the material world, yes.
Mati defines moral life, because some people also define like Pitri Puja and all these other things, Adhavara Shangiti, as moral life, and if somebody doesn't do, it's not considered moral.
Well, this is what was described before. Previously he described that those activities which are favorable for Krishna consciousness, then those are there. Means, see, the difficulty comes if someone wants to go to the heavenly planets, then if he doesn't perform all the Vedic rituals, then it's immoral. Because he is, let's say he's doing austerity, charity, you know, sacrifices, but it's, and he's going he himself wants to go to the heavenly planets. But now if he doesn't do the Shraddhas and all these things for those people who live in the heavenly planets, who are giving him the facility and benefit that he can perform those activities and the knowledge and everything, then that is immoral. But for the devotee, then what's favorable for service to Krishna, that is done. So the point is that when one is not directly, if one is dealing with desires that aren't direct service to Krishna, then what form are they going to take? So they're either going to be moral or immoral. Therefore, to engage in Krishna's service, one will traditionally take the moral. That is the, and engage that in Krishna's service rather than the immoral engaging in Krishna's service.
The Vedic injunctions prescribe performance of the Panchamahayagya, all five of them. But in the Gita, Krishna says, Yanti Deva Vrata Devam, Pitri Yanti Pitri Vrata, Bhutani Yanti Pudeja, Yanti Madhyajini, Yajini Kumam. And those who worship the ancestors go to them, those who worship the Devas go to them, those who worship the Bhutas go to take birth among such beings, and those who worship me live with me. What about those who perform all five?
Well, it's basically is what is their goal, like that. Because some people they'll be performing all five, but within that, their emphasis is on their goal of performing those five is to get to the heavenly planets, or get to Pitri Loka, or attain certain powers and all that from the ghosts. So basically, in other words, it's people generally situated more in passion, goodness, or ignorance, like that. Because it's passion, the Petris in that aspect is the duty because of the whole family relationships and all these kind of desires. Well, the Devas, then they're providing the things. So the others for the name, and they're subtle. And then the ghost, it's ignorance because what you can get from them is very external. There's something from here. Okay. Like that. Because basically from that you would also get from the Devas, you get the Rishis, they're kind of in the same category.
Mm-hmm.
And from the Pitris, then also the ones that are alive, then they're also kind of in the same category. Respect to the Brahmins and like that. So in other words, it's the human level. So you have the higher level, the human level, and the lower level. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lahiri, with tears in his eyes. O spiritual master, I take shelter of your feet. By hearing the honey of your words, I now understand my relationship with Lord Krishna. By your mercy, all my previous ideas of caste, knowledge, and spiritual instruction are thrown far away. Now please mercifully instruct me about Abhideya. Babaji, there need be no more worry. Now that you are humble, Sri Krishna Chaitanya will certainly be merciful to you. Association with devotees is the only cure for souls bound in the material world. A bona fide spiritual master mercifully teaches one how to serve Lord Krishna. By engaging in devotional service, one gradually attains the goal of life. Thus, devotional service is called Abhideya. So then you associate with the devotees. They engage you in devotional service. From that, then those who are prominent, they teach us how to perform those services. Right? And then we see is that then by performing that service, then you attain the goal of life. So Abhideya means is process. Process should give you a result. It means any activity should give result. It gives result. It means it gives the result you want, then it's the right activity. If it doesn't give the result you want, it means it's the wrong activity for the result you want. So since attaining love of Krishna is the goal, then this avideya will get you that. And so then that is gained by this association, by serving under the devotees. So it's through the devotees that actually one gets all this perfection. So that's right here. Lahiri, please tell me, how does one serve Lord Hari? Babaji, devotional service to Lord Hari is called bhakti. Bhakti has three stages. One, sadhana, devotional service and practice. Two, bhava, ecstasy. And three, prema, pure love. The beginning stage is called sadhana. By again and again performing sadhana, bhava is manifested. When bhava becomes perfect, it is called prema. Lahiri, what are the different kinds of sadhana and how are they performed? Please teach me that. Babaji, in his book, Sri Hari Bhakti, Hari Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Srila Rupa Goswami has elaborately described all this. I will give a brief summary. There are nine kinds of sadhana. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23 it is said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. Thus in Srimad Bhagavatam it is written that the nine kinds of sadhana bhakti are: 1. Hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu. 2. Remembering them. 3. Serving the lotus feet of the Lord. 4. Offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 kinds of paraphernalia. 5. Offering prayers to the Lord. 6. Becoming a servant. 7. Considering the Lord one's best friend. And 8. Surrendering everything unto him. Somehow they didn't know.
Shavanam and Kirtanam.
Yeah, he put together in one. It's funny that this didn't figure that out. Describing the different limbs and sublimbs that are parts of these, Srila Rupa Goswami describes 64 different kinds of sadhana bhakti. While considering these points, another topic needs to be explained. Sadhana bhakti is of two kinds. 1. Vaidhi, according to rules and regulations. And 2. Raganuga, spontaneous. In Vaidhi bhakti, one engages in the nine kinds of activities previously described. In Raganuga bhakti, one engages in the activities of sadhana bhakti. One becomes a follower of the people of Raja. And in one's mind, one serves Lord Krishna as they do. One should engage in the kind of sadhana bhakti for which he is qualified. Lahiri, how does one know he is qualified for one or the other of these kinds of sadhana bhakti? Babaji, a faithful person who follows the rules and regulations is qualified. In the beginning, his spiritual master teaches him Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Then, when the disciple becomes qualified, the spiritual master teaches him how to worship the Lord by following the path of Raganuga bhakti. Lahiri, how does a person know he has become qualified for this? Babaji, one who has not yet experienced in his heart the love that characterizes Raganuga Bhakti, and who instead wishes to serve the Lord according to the rules and regulations described in the scriptures, is qualified to engage in Vaidhi Bhakti. One who does not wish to be ruled by the scriptures' rules and regulations in his devotional life to Lord Hari, and whose heart a spontaneous love for Lord Hari's devotional service has become manifested, is qualified to engage in Raganuga Bhakti. Lahiri, O Master, please tell me for which I am qualified. I cannot understand these explanations of who is qualified for what. I do not know whether I should engage in Vaidhi or Raganuga Bhakti. Babaji, if you examine your heart, you will understand where you are qualified. In your heart you see the idea that it is not possible to engage in devotional service to Lord Hari without following the scriptures' teachings. In my mind is the idea that sadhana bhakti, following scriptures, in my mind is the idea that sadhana bhakti, following the scriptures' teachings, brings the best result. But now in my mind I also think that devotional service to Lord Hari is a great ocean of nectar. And by engaging in devotional service, I will gradually be able to taste that nectar. Babaji, you can now see that the scriptures, rules, and regulations are the ruler of your mind. Therefore, you should engage in Vaidhi Bhakti. Gradually, the spiritual love that is Raganuga Bhakti will manifest in your heart. So here, one has to be very careful that of these two, because a very specific way of recognizing has been given. The principles are the same, sometimes the detail will be explained differently. Is that the Vaidhi sadhana means that one is dependent upon the rules and regulations, while Raganuga means one is not dependent upon the rules and regulations. The Vaidhi sadhana, the one feels that it should be done because it's what it says in the scripture. While the Raganuga, one is doing it not because of that, but because of the devotional sentiments towards Krishna. So one has to be very careful here, because it is said, when he says here, one who does not wish to be ruled by the scriptures, rules, and regulations in his devotional service to Lord Hari, and whose heart of spontaneous love for Lord Krishna's devotional service has become manifested, is qualified to engage in Raganuga. So then we'll see is that it's a very... the living entity in the material world has a tendency to not want to be controlled by rules and regulations, especially we see in the modern context. Regulation is something that is not very pleasing to people, you know, because then that means there's authority. We're not the authority. We're not in control. So one has to be able to see the difference between not interested in following the rules and regulations, so therefore one is below the standard of devotional service, or in other words, one is not yet properly situated on devotional service or bhajana kriya. And those who... the reason that they're serving Krishna is not because the scriptures say that if you don't, then you'll go to hell, and if you do, then you'll get so much benefit and this and that. But they're doing it because Krishna is nice. They like him. Right? It's just like the difference. The mother is taking care of the child because it's her duty as a mother to take care of the child. Right? That's Vaidhi. The mother is taking care of the child because the mother likes the child. So therefore, because of that affection, she wants to do whatever she can, or any service she can. We see the difference? Like that. So that's the difference. But in explaining it, then one can sometimes misunderstand that it means one doesn't follow anything. One just does, it's a sporadic or whimsical devotional service. Spontaneous means is that the same sadhana is followed, but it's spontaneous rather than enforced. It's, in other words, the mind likes it. You're following the Vaidhi, and you're following the Vaidhi because the intelligence says this is what should be done. Right? This is Buddha Yoga. But then if the mind likes it, one does it anyway. Right? Just like one does so many material activities, even though the intelligence knows they're not good, or they are good. Right? Like someone, let's say, they like to do an activity that's very good, let's say they like to do some, exercise or something. They're doing it not because you should exercise, they're doing it because they like exercise. Even if they came up and said exercise is bad for you, they still do it. Right? You know, people who smoke, they know it's bad for them, they still smoke. So the whole thing is they're doing it because they like it. That's the difference. If you're doing it because you know, yes, you know, you got to do this, and it helps this and that, and so therefore, you know, one's enthusiastic to do it because one sees the benefits. The other is that you're not worried about the benefits. Benefits, no benefits. You're just doing it because you like it. But the activities will look the same. That's sometimes it is. It'll be said that the raganuga sadhana looks different from the bhakti. It doesn't. It looks exactly the same. Because raganuga is not the external. Raganuga is the mood, like that. Because it's the mood that actually establishes something. Right? If someone performs, engages in an activity, and their heart's not in it, everybody can see. But the activity's going on, and they can say, "What's wrong? I'm doing the work." No, but you know, you have to, you know, like doing it, or you know, be enthusiastic to do it. And that says, no, I'm doing it. What is your problem? No, but you have to have the right mood. So that's the thing, is that raganuga means the mood is there. So therefore, because that mood is there, then you're not doing it because of the scriptures say that this is what must be done. You're doing it because you like doing those things. So that's from this angle, and that is the... So when we understand that devotional service is good, it's proper, you know, Krishna is God, and you know, the scriptures say all these different things, then that is Vaidhi Sadhana. That's one's qualified for that. But when one is just, he likes doing devotional activities, whether the, you know, means he's performing the bona fide activities, whether he knows that the scriptures say they're good or not, that's the secondary thing. You know?
Yes. Isn't it that the systematic way anyway is to go through Vaidhi Sadhana first, no matter what?
Yeah, means Vaidhi means, see, Vaidhi is always performed. Even someone on the spontaneous platform performs the Vaidhi Sadhana, the rules and regulations of it. But why they're doing it, that's different. That's the point. Like we mentioned about the mother, you know, so they're doing it because it's duty or because they like the kid. But it looks the same. They feed him, they clothe him, they do all the same thing. So that's the difference. But externally, it'll look the same. So sometimes people try to say it will look different. But then, if it looks different, it means it has to look different. That's a rule. So generally you'll find most who speak about raganuga and they say, you know, this Vaidhi is not so important. Then why it's not important? If you like doing it, then what's wrong with it? So since it's not important, why it's not important? Well, Vishwanath Chakrabarty Thakur says here in this book, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur here says this. And that means the teachings of the scripture are your motive for doing it. So your following of raganuga bhakti is because the scriptures say you should do it, and it's a higher platform. So that person's performance of raganuga bhakti is not raganuga, it's actually Vaidhi. Like that. It just automatically comes. So therefore one just performs it. So even the advanced devotee performs it. Like we see Srila Prabhupada, he would perform Vaidhi Bhakti, you know, the externals of it. He would get up, he would do all the things, offer obeisances, this and that. Because otherwise, how will anyone else get inspired to do it? Because if the Paramahamsas act as Paramahamsas, there's no question of us being able to be attracted to it. Like, let's say, okay, let's take a Paramahamsa acting as a Paramahamsa. So we have one Paramahamsa, and he wanders through the forest with no clothes on. And when he goes into the villages and all that, then the kids come and joke and laugh because he's walking around with no clothes on. You know, and they come up to him because they'll be sitting someplace, you know, because whether you sit here or walk there, it doesn't matter, it's all the same. Material energy is just Brahman. So therefore, then the kids would come up and pass urine on him, and, you know, say all kinds of nasty things and this and that, and he couldn't care less. Because, you know, whatever aspect of material energy it is, it's still just the energy of the Lord. So there's no, for them, there's no auspicious, inauspicious, clean, dirty, good, bad, none of these things are there. Right? And then, when this naked person, you know, then wanders, you know, into the assembly of sages, those sages recognizing his position, then ask him to sit down and describe the Lord's glories to Maharaj Pratikit. So now, if that is how Srila Prabhupada behaved, now would any of us be sitting here? That's the point. Therefore, even the Mahabhagavats, the Nitya Siddhas, the Baba Bhaktas, whatever, they all perform the activities of Bhakti. But you can't tell. It means the neophyte won't tell the difference between Vaidhi and Raghunatha, because it'll look the same on the outside. But when they're more advanced, then they can tell the difference. It's just the quality in which it's done. You know, just like someone who's very expert can tell when someone performs an activity, whether they are absorbed in it or whether they're doing it mechanically. But someone who's brand new can't tell the difference, because all they know is that the external activity, and this is what they're doing. They themselves are mechanical about it in trying to perform it. So someone who's brand new and can only perform it mechanical, for them to say, no, I'm spontaneous, why do I care for all this mechanicalness? How will they change? Because it's the mood, it's not anything external. You know. So therefore, we may change. Instead of reading this book, we read that book. Or instead of wearing the border on a dhoti, we don't wear the border on a dhoti. Or we will use a white bead bag and not a saffron bead bag. But none of these, absolutely not one of these, has anything to do with Raghunatha Bhakti. No, you can't use this kind of bead bag, you know, I mean, you know, Tulsi Devi is a Paramahamsa. That's a rule. That is Vaidhi Sadhana. 101%. So these are the things. So one has to be very, very careful. Yes.
This is an argument against.
Against what?
Against your statement.
Okay.
I'm not committed to the argument. I'm just. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur brings up the point that someone may say, how can it be Raghunatha if we're taking guidance from the Shastras in the performance of Raghunatha, what is favorable to Rag, what is unfavorable, and so on. And he answers that by saying the fact that you are interested in developing the Rag and finding what is favorable and unfavorable is itself an indication that one is in a way ready for the performance of Raghunatha Sadhana.
Yes, but how much ready? Ready for how many seconds? And then after that they go back to their nice house and sell paintings and maintain their family. You know what I'm saying? How Raghunatha is selling paintings to make money so that you can live separately in your own nice house and all that and maintain your family. So these are the things. It's maybe a beginning, but one calls something when it's the major aspect. Right? It's just like, you know, you take the vegetables and you start cutting them and you know, are very enthusiastic, but can you say you have a cooked preparation? Right? Is it cooked? Is cooking even going on? No. So the whole point is when you are your purpose is to end up with a cooked preparation, and you're cutting vegetables, then the name of it's called cutting vegetables. You can call the whole thing cooking. It means the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, the whole thing is just, it's Raga Nuga Bhakti. But you have to see which stage of Raga Nuga one is at. So when the rules and regulations are the most prominent, then it's called Vaidhi. When they're a little less prominent, then it's called Raga Nuga Sadhana. It's still sadhana. When it's even less, and then one is on the platform of, you know, Brahma Bhuta, then it's called Bhav Sadhana. It's still a sadhana. And then when, you know, it becomes, you know, complete, then it's called Prema. Then we begin the discussion. Because from there, then you have 8 more stages to go to get to Mahabhav. Means in the 10 levels of Prema, Bhakti, the what we call Prema is the second level. You know, so when we talk about Raga Nuga and then we're so big and advanced, it's just, you know, the next one up from the very bottom one. You know. Like that. So you have so many stages to go. And then, you know, then you finally get to where things are happening. So that the desire is there, of course, but that is our whole siddhanta. Our whole process is Raga Nuga. Like that. Our whole process is already Raga Nuga. The difficulty comes is that Prabhupada's already established a society based on these principles of Raga Nuga. And it's been so nicely done that basically it is unseen that that's what it is. There's a saying in Bengali, is that you learn, you take a knife and you go out and you rub it on a tree, you know, up and down on the tree bark. And in this way the knife becomes sharp. Then you want to test, is the knife sharp? So what do? You cut the tree to see if it's sharp. So Prabhupada's already picked everybody up and engaged them according to their interests, you know, and that. Which means that there's that element of Raga Nuga is there. Then he engages one and says that one has to follow all these things nicely, and then naturally higher levels will develop. So therefore, within the realm of Raga Nuga, Bhakti, then he has established the aspects of the necessary aspects of Vaidhi. While you see in, and one can see the difference, because one can say, no, but that's Vaidhi. Let us look really at Vaidhi. Real Vaidhi is like what the Sri Vaishnavas follow, those who are going to Vaikuntha. That is Vaidhi. Within that, they also have a level that you could basically call Raga Nuga. When they're old and they've finished all their household duties and all that, and they take up the Vanaprastha ashram, then they you know, hear the teachings on the secret mantra on which they will surrender to the Lord. And then their guru teaches them the subtleties of sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja, full surrender. Then they sit down and they start doing japa and reading and all these other things like that. So within their Vaidhi, they have that element of, you know, a more natural, spontaneous. So we can see from this is we start with where they get to the platform that they would call more spontaneous. But because the person themselves isn't really enough spontaneous to be able to work fully within Raga Nuga, therefore Vaidhi is established to see that all the necessities of devotional service are performed. The necessities must be there, whether you're taking them by force or by intelligence or by natural or a combination. But when the spontaneity, that desire, that is the main driving force, then one can call it Raga Nuga. But we'll see that Raga Nuga is not touched by, you know, it's not how you say, it doesn't work within the realm of politicalness, you know, it doesn't work within the realm of, you know, so many different things. So therefore, one has to be careful to see, you know, actually what is, I mean, in other words, Prabhupada has given us Raganuga Bhakti, but now we'll have, within Raganuga Bhakti, we'll be doing Vaidhi Raganuga, then we'll be doing more Raganuga Raganuga, then there'll be Bhava Raganuga, then there'll be Prema Raganuga. So the situation, in other words, the sambandha of something, what it's situated in, that, because that will flavor it. You know, so that has to be studied. But generally what's seen is the externals, that's what I was saying before. That's what I'm saying, is it's not really a Raganuga. It's not enough just that you like. I like hearing about the, you know, the Lord's pastimes of the gopis. It's nice. And then you also like, you know, taking your wife down to the shop and sitting there for an hour while she buys saris. So that's also spontaneous. So therefore, do we call that Raganuga sadhana? That's the point. Of course, it's not, it doesn't matter what ashram one in or what varna one's in. But when the activities of varna and ashram are a very prominent aspect in your life as a need, rather than just as a form, as a medium, then you can't call it Raganuga. Raganuga means that what they're talking about is that where it's beyond, and you know, all this opulence and all this and that, you know. But we do notice that the major members of Raganuga movements happen to stay in Vrindavan at the MBT, because they cannot live in the little holes in the wall that the Babaji's live in and go out and pass stool in the field and get their water and the other, you know, 100 feet the other way from the pump, along with all the other kids and other screaming this and that and rickshaw wallahs and puppy dogs. And so for all the thing that, you know, ISKCON and its opulence, somehow the Raganuga Bhaktas do appreciate the, you know, the comfort of it because of their conditioned nature. So one has to be very, very careful in understanding that Raganuga goes beyond these things. That's the whole point, it's beyond. But it has to have a form, because we have a conditioned nature, because it's sadhana still. Therefore, it deals with the conditioned nature. It can't avoid dealing with the conditioned nature. So then, that means the conditioned nature has a certain thing that needs to be engaged in. So depending upon how much you need how important are to you are the results of engaging the conditioned nature, then one can start to see a little bit more. But the point is devotional service springs from devotional service. That is the fact. The rules even of devotional service don't create devotional service. It's that you're doing it, it'll create bhakti sukriti. But when you're doing it because you understand that it is service to the Lord, that's when it becomes bhakti. Otherwise it's bhakti sukriti. And from that you'll get so much sukriti that you will come in contact with the devotees, hear about the Lord, and engage in devotion, get the opportunity to engage.
What makes bhakti sukriti?
When you perform devotion, unknowingly perform devotional activity. Just like you have, the devotees are there in the street singing and dancing for Lord Jagannath. For them it's devotional service. Some person walks by, sees the kirtan, hears the kirtan, looks up, sees, you know, some, you know, how you say, form up there with very large round eyes and kind of looks at it and then moves on. You know, it looks interesting, what is all this, you know, and then moves on. For that person, it wasn't devotional service as such, it was bhakti sukriti. Right? Means it's the sukriti by which now they can perform. It's like the seed for it. They can perform, and get the opportunity to associate and take it up. But if they see that, that's the sukriti, and then from that they take it to the next step. Well, what are they doing? Go over, and then they take part in it. You know, actually endeavor in it. It's not just an appreciation. Then it becomes service. But still, known service then will give more benefit than unknown. Like that. So when they understand it's the devotional process, then they'll get more than if they don't understand. Does that make some sense? So the field of the activities one must see, it's understood any devotional service is because there's some spontaneous mood, the natural attraction of the soul for God. So it's all, you know, the guest comes and eats the halva and they love the halva. That's devotional service, that's spontaneous. They like because it's nice. Not because it's God and it's Prashad and you should honor Prashad. They just like the taste of the halva. So it's actually spontaneous devotional service. But they're only on that platform when they're eating the halva. And then for everything else, they're not. So can you call them on the platform of spontaneous devotional service? Right? You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that it must be with that. And so yes, it is a qualification, but how qualified are you? If that's your major thing all the time, then yes, then that becomes the main flavor. But if it's just an inspiration that comes up now and again, or for only a portion of the day, or for more, then one will say the Vaidhi will be more prominent. So therefore, it's just like, is there no Shraddha? That means the faith that one has at Nishta is definitely much greater than in the beginning of devotional service. But it's not called faith, it's called Nishta. And the point in devotional service where one is just deciding whether he's going to take up the process or not, that means very little faith. That's called faith. Why? Because that is the prominent thing in the person's consciousness. Is, do I take this up or do I not take this up? So gaining the faith, that's what is all-absorbing to that person. Therefore, it's called Shraddha. Being steady in devotional service and fixed at that, and then that's called Nishtha. They have a taste, and that's called Ruchi. Though the faith in Ruchi is greater than the faith there. Their ability to perform the devotional activities is greater than the person in Nishtha, but it's not called Bhajana Kriya. Right? Their association with devotees takes on a whole new realm once they have taste in the devotional process. So they have a taste for hearing chanting, taste for associating with devotees. But it's not called sadhusanga, it's called ruchi. Because that's what's prominent in their mind, the taste of doing, associating with devotees, performing the devotional activities, being studying, they have a taste for that. Does that make sense? So in the same way as Raganuga, then means that becomes the prominent field. And one sees that it is, you know, has a certain steadiness to it, certain maturity, and at the same time is not overshadowed by other things that would be seen as, you know, not important. You know. One says, oh, we don't care for all this Varnashram. At the same time as one is very much engaged in economic development, but just in a non-Varnashram way, then one can't say that one has sidestepped Vaidhi. You know. Does that make some sense? You know, it's like you're following some rule. It means you have to be at work at 9 o'clock, and then they'll let you out at 5 o'clock, and you got to be there 5 days a week, and so many days a year. That's a Vaidhi, but it's just not this scriptural Vaidhi. You know, it's what your boss said to do. You know, so are you at that job because you love being at that job, or you're there because if you don't go, then you'll get fired and they won't have any money? Does that make some sense? Like that. So it all depends upon what is the move. So it's a subtle thing, what's there, especially when you're dealing in the realm that is already Raganuga. You know, I mean, someone would have to prove that ISKCON's purpose is Vaidhi Bhakti. That's its goal. We are trying to get people to Vaikuntha, where they're going to, you know, eternally follow the rules and regulations as their form of devotional service. Then one could say that this is a society based on Vaidhi Sadhana. But the point is it doesn't matter who they are, they, when they come into devotional service, they have to take up Vaidhi Bhakti as the beginning, unless they've already done it in a previous life. And so you'll see that they will do it, maybe just for some days or weeks or months or years. And then they'll immediately be into the next stage. But we see all the Rup Sanatan, Raghunath Das, they, you know, they all would start through Vaidhi. And then within a very short time, then they've gone beyond that. But they would show the process. They would always show the process. Lord Chaitanya, he went and he took initiation. He followed the process. But, you know, very soon after that, you know, when he walked from Gaya, you know, to what's that place?
Kanai Nakshala.
Kanai Nakshala, which is not far, because Gaya is in Bihar, you know, kind of, and then just coming into Bengal, then you have this Kanai Nakshala. There, then he's already now started on the platform of spontaneous devotional service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it only takes a few days to walk, probably from the one to the other. But he's showing the process. You know, because he was sitting and chanting the names of the gopis, that's when he decided to take sannyas, you know, which one could say is a Vaidhi form. But the problem was, is because he was performing the Raganuga sadhana, and those who were performing Vaidhi sadhana couldn't understand, therefore he'll take a position of senior Vaidhi to them by sannyas. Then they can relate to it, they can understand what he's doing. That, you know, they have to listen to what he has to say. Does this make any sense? So therefore, the difficulty in many of these things comes from the premise that ISKCON is Vaidhi, what Prabhupada's given is just basic. So that's okay if you're talking mundane subject matter, because basic is just basic, because ABCs is, you know, nothing substantial. But when you're talking spiritual, basic means Siddhanta, means essence. Means, you know, the principle on which everything is based. Because we see is also Rupa Goswami, when he, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when he explains the 64 items of devotional service, he says, I'm only giving the principles, or the fundamentals. He says, the details my brother's already given in Hari Bhakti Vilas. So these are the kind of basics that Srila Prabhupada has given. It's the essence. Like that. Only on the mundane platform, then the essence is considered, you know, just beginner stage. Like that. But on the transcendental platform, essence is not beginner stage. Essence is the end stage. So Prabhupada was so expert at giving essence to neophytes. That was his expertise, his uniqueness. Therefore, he could transplant a Raganuga culture into the midst of a culture that didn't like to follow one rule or one regulation, either spiritual or mundane. Like that. So this is the... I would say difficulties come up because of these misunderstandings. Making sense? Or like that. Because it's when it's talked about Vaidhi, then they're not giving example within their own sphere. The example is ISKCON. You know? But the thing is they have to be able to give it within their own sphere. They have to be able to explain how, you know, there's certain things that one must follow. You know, otherwise, how do they explain? You know, they offer obeisances to the Maharajas. Grihasthas will wear white. The Brahmacharis will wear saffron. You know, they'll use a certain, they'll wear dhotis, they'll wear, put on tilak, they'll wear neck beads. Now, these are not rules and regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti. Paramahamsas don't bother with any of that. So, it is, but it's just dependent upon what is the mood. That's the thing. Is that factually it would be very difficult to tell the difference between someone, a person who's doing Vaidhi Bhakti and the person who is doing Raga Nuga. Because the example is given also by Vishwanath that the when a wife has a paramour, she does her household duties even better so that no one else will suspect. Therefore, a real well-situated Raganuga Bhakta will look more like a Vaidhi Sadhaka than a Vaidhi Sadhaka. And then others will say, oh, just see Vaidhi. So that is the difficulty. Is then, if that's the example given by the Acharyas, then why would anyone have any complaint about the Vaidhi? Because it's going to be the form in any case. Whether it's the mood or not, that's another thing. But the form will always look like Vaidhi. And if someone complains about opulence, then Vrindavan's definitely not the place to go. Because Vrindavan is unlimitedly more opulent than Vaikuntha. So when you have Krishna, automatically Lakshmi is there. Radharani is there. She's the supreme goddess of fortune. So then, if opulence is there, why is that a sign of Vaidhi? Okay. Or?
But Vishnu Chakravarti also makes it clear that Raga is interest in the Lord, but exclusive interest in the Lord. It's not just interest.
Because, that's a good point.
Because he states, if someone claims to walk towards the east, then he should walk towards the east. He should not turn back and walk towards the west sometimes. He should walk towards the east. So if someone claims to be a serious devotee of the Lord, he should only look that side towards him, not towards... He calls Vishaya Lampatya, sense indulgence. He says anyone who is interested in sense indulgence, he should only look at the feet of the Lord. He's got no right to see above the Lord.
Also, very nice point. And then to counter this, then they'll say, but in the Bhagavatam it says by reading the Raslila, then all lust will go.
But it says
so the point is then, but the Acharya has spoken. So then how to balance these two? So there must, it can't be just so easy to say, well, here it says, because he's saying there can't be this. So it means when actually sincerely the desire is for that to go, and that is one's endeavor, then these things will make it go. But if it is just one of the things you like to do, you know, you like to walk east, you like to walk west, you like to walk this, that, then it will only increase. That's the thing.
Also here is the Acharya. Vishwanath Chakravarti has commented on that particular verse and clarified it. He said lust may be in the heart, but if one acts on lust, that's different. So it's like one going to the east, he may desire to turn back and go to the west, but he doesn't. So Bhagavatam is stating that the topics are so powerful, even if you desire to look, because in Jnana Yoga and other processes, if one simply desires, that's a disqualification. But in our process, the desire is not a disqualification. It's just what they do is the qualification. So lust may be there, but if one acts on lust, then it becomes Vishaya Lampatya, sense indulgence. Then he is disqualified. Also, your point about Raganuga being the interest, the taste. Actually, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he refers to Vaidhi Bhakti as Vidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti as Ruchi Bhakti.
Mm.
So, it's actually that.
Mm.
It's just the taste, if I may say.
Is what tell what is the distinction between a devotee who's performing Raganuga Bhakti having a taste for the process of devotional service and one who actually has attraction for Krishna, doing it by affection for Krishna?
Basically, that's the difference between the Madhyama and the Uttama. Madhyama means ruchi and asakti means that you have an attraction to the process. But the process is Krishna. And bhava means it's actually to Krishna himself. Like that. That would be from what I understand. Okay, we should probably end here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jai
Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki
jai
Chaitanya Gaura Prabhu ki jai